The climate is changing. So are we. I'm Laura Lynch, and I host What on Earth? That's CBC's Climate Solutions podcast. Twice a week, we take you around the world to find the people who are trying to build a better future for all of us. We explore indigenous science, new technologies. We talk openly about mental health and climate anxiety. We also take your smart questions all the time. Come find What on Earth wherever you get your podcasts.
This is a CBC podcast.
This is World Report. Good morning, I'm Kayla Hounsell in Halifax. We begin in Gaza. People in Rafah sift through the rubble of a residential building after an Israeli airstrike Friday night. At least 9 people were killed. 6 were children, according to hospital officials. Israel has warned that it plans to launch a full attack on the border city, saying it cannot defeat Hamas without a ground assault in Rafah. In Israel, meanwhile, fears of an escalation in the confrontation with Iran are receding. Iranian officials are indicating that there will be no response to a strike near an important airbase overnight Thursday. The CBC's Chris Brown has more from Jerusalem.
It was Israel's destruction of an Iranian consulate in Syria on April the 1st, which killed senior military officers, that triggered fears of a major confrontation between the two longtime enemies. After Iran responded with an unprecedented missile barrage on Israel, Israel vowed retaliation. And yet, when it came overnight Thursday, both sides seemed eager to end it there. Israel did not claim responsibility for the attack on what U.S. sources said were Iranian radar installations. And speaking through a translator with NBC News, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, appeared to dismiss the incident entirely.
They're like more like toys that our children play with, not drones. It was not worth telling us before it happened.
If indeed this chapter of the confrontation is closed, it means Israel will likely return to its war against Hamas in Gaza. Israeli media are reporting that Egypt has been told by Israel that an attack on Rafah is imminent. 1.6 million displaced people are sheltering there in tents and are extremely vulnerable. We're all in danger. The kids are in danger and the women are in danger, said Abdullah Al-Tarabin. Every humanitarian group in Gaza has warned Israel not to attack, saying it will be a bloodbath with so many civilians exposed. And yet, that appears to be the next phase in this war, which the territory's health ministry says has already killed 34,000 people. Chris Brown, CBC News, Jerusalem.
After months of stalemate, the U.S. House of Representatives is expected to pass a series of foreign aid bills today. Lawmakers will vote separately on aid for Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan. This all coincides with a visit by a leading member of Ukrainian parliament to Canada this week. Oleksandra Ustinova delivered a stark warning to Canadian politicians and top defense officials. As the CBC's Murray Brewster reports, she is pleading for more weapons and equipment.
And they're watching to see if America will stand up for its allies, and we will.
U.S. House Speaker Mike Johnson on the compromise legislation to unblock more than $60 billion in critical American aid to Ukraine. As Russia makes steady, bloody progress on the battlefield, the warnings are becoming more sharp. Oleksandra Ustinova has spent several days in Canada, meeting with top officials. She toured a major Canadian army base and was dismayed.
And there are a lot of stuff that can be donated, but is not for some reason.
Canada has donated Leopard tanks, as well as 39 brand-new armored combat support vehicles and over 200 armored patrol cars. But it has a stock of hundreds of older armored vehicles left over from the Afghan war that Ustinova says her country can use. Last year, during President Volodymyr Zelensky's visit, Canada committed to acquiring an additional 50 armored vehicles for Ukraine. The contract, however, has yet to be signed. Murray Brewster, CBC News, Ottawa.
An enormous amount of rain has hit the Persian Gulf, Pakistan, and Afghanistan this week. Flooding has killed more than 100 people. And although this kind of weather isn't unexpected, the warming planet is adding to its intensity. Science reporter Anand Ram has more.
In Afghanistan, men push a car stuck on a flooded street. picking up the pieces in Pakistan next door, villagers whose homes are now mud and rubble. Our children narrowly escaped by the grace of God, says one. Just a taste of the fallout from powerful storms this month around the Persian Gulf that killed more than 130 people with unexpected timing and intensity. Mudhuvel Chalaya is with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Things other than what we canonically expect, quote-unquote, happen, they're not happening, but then it's happening outside of the expected regimes and times.
He says global warming is driving that uncertainty.
What's happening is really this volatility in the events, the extreme events. People do not know how to cope up with that, comprehend that.
But with more frequent extremes, experts say governments can't get away with treating them as once-in-a-lifetime events. Aisha Siddiqui studies disaster risk at the University of Cambridge.
It's very, very convenient for the state to divert that responsibility and say, actually, this was a natural disaster or this was because of the climate.
For Pakistan, the storms come just 2 years after more than 1,700 people were killed and tens of millions affected by monsoon flooding. An early reminder that this year's rainy season hasn't even started yet. Anand Ram, CBC News, Toronto.
A man who set himself on fire outside the Donald Trump hush money trial has died. It happened during protests outside the New York courthouse as the jury was being finalized inside. Police say the man threw pamphlets into the air before dousing his body in a liquid accelerant.
And then he pulled out a lighter and just lit himself on fire. It seemed like he had real purpose. Everybody started to run away from him.
Fred Gates was one of the shaken onlookers. Police say the man died in hospital due to his injuries. They don't believe he was targeting Donald Trump or the protesters. Nova Scotia Justice Minister Brad Johns has resigned from cabinet. The premier made the announcement in a statement Friday evening. The resignation comes a day after the minister's comments on domestic violence in the province. Johns said he doesn't believe it's an epidemic, a position contrary to the Nova Scotia Mass Casualty Commission's final report. This week marked the fourth anniversary of the Nova Scotia mass shooting. The rampage began with the shooter assaulting his common-law wife. In Labrador, there's a sigh of relief after an uncertain night for residents in Happy Valley Goose Bay. A massive fire there is now under control. George Andrews is the town's mayor.
This morning, I am lifting the state of emergency. We'd like to advise impacted residents that have been displaced as a result of last night's fire evacuation. They are now permitted to return to their homes at this time.
The fire erupted last night and spread to an airport hangar where locals say oxygen tanks were being stored. Several explosions were heard throughout the night and the blaze destroyed several buildings. Ottawa is moving ahead with plans to enhance protections for the white shark off the Atlantic coast. The predator is listed as endangered in Canada, and that has the government developing a recovery strategy. But as Paul Withers reports, there are questions about whether the white shark is actually in trouble.
I don't think this document should even exist at this point. It is premature.
University of Guelph biology professor Steve Crawford says Fisheries and Oceans should throw its recovery strategy overboard and start again. Since DFO admits little is known about white sharks in Atlantic Canada, like how many are here, where they go, their critical habitat that needs protecting, or even if a recovery strategy is feasible.
We simply do not have enough information or knowledge about the Northwest Atlantic white shark with which to assess them at all.
Scientists believe white sharks are recovering, likely thanks to conservation efforts in the 1990s that prohibited killing or injuring them, first in the U.S. and later in Canada. Fishermen like Billy Bond are seeing more of them.
At one point, there was none of them off of cancer. Every year, it's getting worse and worse and worse.
DFO says gaps like abundance and distribution will be filled over the next 5 years in an action plan that will also identify critical habitat.
I think that the population is in good shape.
Steve Crawford says plan to see more of them.
So even putting up beach signs, letting people know that these white sharks are around there.
The Nova Scotia government says it has received no white shark sightings at its beaches, but they are here. Online trackers such as OSearch have become a popular way to watch their activity along the coast. Paul Withers, CBC News, Halifax.
And finally, forget Spotify, Apple Music, Amazon Music Prime, or whatever other streaming service you use to get your tunes. Today is all about doing it old school. Happy Record Store Day. It's a day to celebrate independent record stores, and what you're hearing in the background here is this year's Record Day ambassador, Paramore. The band has timed its latest release to coincide with the occasion. And that is the latest national and international news from World Report. I'm Kayla Hounsell. This is CBC News.
For more CBC podcasts, go to cbc.ca/podcasts.